Well, good morning, everyone. Beautiful spring day, as we can all see. You know, I'm obviously Byron Richards. I think most of you know who I am, but somebody on the tape might not, so I'm introducing myself. Wellness Resources is, of course, our company. We're a family business. We've been around, is it 25 years? Somebody help me on that. It was 1985 we started, so we're coming up on 25 years. So that is the history. I, of course, began working many years ago with a physician who dealt with thyroid as his primary business. I was his nutritionist. And so I have helped literally thousands of people with the subject of thyroid hormone and trying to get it balanced. I have seen just about everything and anything that you can imagine with the subject, whether it's the use of hormones relating to it, the use of nutrition, just what's going on. It's always been an area of fascination for me. So I always follow the literature on thyroid and like to be on, as most of you know, the front end or the cutting edge of what literature is saying, because science has new toy tools and they like to put them to old theories and test out what people have believed for a long time about certain things. And I will be sharing some of that new science with you today, because everybody likes to hear something new, no doubt, about a subject. So that will be on the agenda. I'd like to just also point out that springtime, as beautiful as it is right now, can also be a time of thyroid distress for many people. In other words, there are those of us who, when the snow melts and the birds start chirping and we have that fresh smell of everything coming to life again, at least here in Minnesota, that's kind of the pattern. A lot of us feel, wow, it's time to wake up. It's time to turn back on. And then there are others of us who, despite a nice day, may feel kind of rotten the next day. And it's often puzzling why that is. But both fall and spring are what I call thyroid times of the year for individuals who are sort of struggling with the subject. The reason is thyroid hormone, which has a big role in setting your body temperature, is stressed by temperature changes. And it only changes its hormone about once a week, literally, the levels. There's some variance in that. But the main theme of it is to change thyroid levels about once a week. Well, when the temperature is 70, and then it's 30, and then it's 50, and then it's 30, and then it's 70, and you have this up and down happening in the course of a week, that's actually quite stressful to somebody with a thyroid issue. And so they can end up feeling mood distressed, even though it's a beautiful spring day. And so that's just one of the little things that happens this time of year. It's not the only thing that happens relating to thyroid, but it is certainly one of the key things to think about. Of course, wintertime is the thyroid doldrums for a lot of people. And the longer it drags on, the more it feels like you're hibernating, and that's sort of what you're doing. And so that's a little different. But when we have the rapid fluctuations of temperature, that is, in fact, a thyroid stress. One of the things I want to really emphasize today in my talk is the idea of why may your thyroid be underperforming. What is going on here? What are the reasons for this? Way too much focus just on the thyroid gland itself. I've been watching this for years and years and years, where there's been this battle going on where there's a whole legion of people who say, I have every symptom of low thyroid in the book, but my thyroid lab tests come back normal, and thank goodness I found a physician who will give me thyroid medication, even though I don't really need it, and maybe that's not such a good idea. And it's really not such a good idea. And what the new subject on this is showing, the new science on this, in other words, we've gone from this era of, well, put a thermometer under your arm and see if your morning temperature is too low, see if you're, you know, just too cold, and that, of course, is reflective of a thyroid problem, and there's an element of truth in that. But is that really what the problem is? And what is a thyroid problem? And what's causing a thyroid problem? And where is it coming from? The lesson we learn about genes and gene signaling, which is now the new frontier of science, is that we could have a room full of people with everyone experiencing mostly the same low thyroid symptoms, and virtually every single person has a different combination of gene switches relating to different on positions in their brain, in their thyroid gland, in their liver, in their muscles, and every single person has a different reason for those symptoms. So part of getting good at solving your own thyroid problem is rising above a rather simplistic understanding of thyroid hormone and being able to integrate for your own self what your different symptoms are likely to mean, what then can you predict about what you should try to do to fix the problem. So I'm going to be covering today what I consider to be the main things that can go wrong or often go wrong, starting from the simple case of basic nutritional deficiencies, because if you don't have the nutrients required to run any system in your body, it just simply can't perform. It's like no raw materials showing up at the job site. You want to build a house, you want to run your metabolism. You know, where's the 2x4s? Where's the plywood? Where's the gasoline? Where are the carpenters? I mean, these are just basic things about how a system functions. Your thyroid gland has various nutritional raw material needs. It has various enzyme systems that must have nutrition in order to function at an optimal rate. And many people are lacking in the most basic fundamental nutrition to have their thyroid system running at optimal level. So maybe that knocks it down 5% of function, maybe it knocks it down 20% of function. There's no real way of knowing, but it's kind of obvious if you don't have enough basic nutrition for your thyroid, it just simply doesn't run right. So that's the first area I'll be covering. And then I'll be going into some of the things that cause or are functional things that are very common in people that result in your thyroid thinking it should run slower on purpose. In other words, it's got the wrong setting, but it thinks it's doing the right thing. So that gets kind of interesting. And you'll want to understand how those different issues could relate to you, because they are very profound and often at the root of different problems. I will also cover briefly the use of thyroid medications. I'm always asked, and I might as well just talk about it a little bit right now. Can you do what I'm saying with nutritional support to help your body function? Can you do that if you're taking thyroid medication? Or can I get off thyroid medication? I get these questions on my emails from people all the time, because individuals are always wondering. And the issue is, nothing I am telling you to do interferes with thyroid hormone medication. If you're on it, you can keep taking it. The one thing you want to understand is that if your system starts running better because it's healthier, you may not need as much medication, which means go back to your doctor and get the dose adjusted. That's true for any drug or any medication. We don't promote nutrition to replace drugs and medication. We promote nutrition to bolster the healthy structure and function of your body. And then if you get yourself into a healthy enough situation, you may not need something, no matter what medication we're talking about. And if that's the case, then you work with your doctor, you work with the lab tests, and so on. In the case of thyroid, one little caveat. If you're doing things with thyroid, no matter what it is, nutrition-wise, trying to improve it, and you're taking medication, and you start to feel too racy or jumpy, like you're getting too hyper from what you're doing, that would be a good time to go to the doctor, because what's happening at that point is the reason the thyroid system may not have been working as well is it might have been lacking some nutrition. Now you put that nutrition back in and it's running better. Well, now the medication dose may be too high because you just don't need that much. So you just pay attention to that. And always, of course, work with your physician whenever you're changing the dose of a medication, because that's what you should do. All right, now, as far as basic thyroid nutrition goes, there are a few things that we have used for many, many years. I'll just briefly cover them. The products Thyroid Helper, Daily Energy Multiple Vitamin, and Iosol Iodine have always been our core basic thyroid support package of nutrients that cover the grounds of the basic nutrients thyroid needs to function. We know, for example, in the Thyroid Helper, one of the key nutrients in there is selenium, which is a mineral. Selenium is the key mineral that enables thyroid hormone to activate. So when your thyroid gland makes thyroid hormone, that's called thyroxine or T4, and that is not an active hormone. It must travel, and most of the activation is done in your liver, where on liver cell membranes, T4 is converted into T3. T3 is the active hormone. It requires sulfur-containing proteins and selenium in order to activate it. Selenium is in major deficiency in our food supply. It should be in the soils that food is grown in, but it's not because of the way farming is done, for the most part. So even if you're eating supposedly a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables that should have selenium in them because selenium should be in the soil, a lot of times it's not, and thus you're deficient. Selenium, besides helping to activate thyroid hormone, is also central to how your body runs its antioxidant defense systems, meaning that selenium also makes an enzyme or enzymes that detoxify chemicals and pollution. So one of the basic problems we have in society today is that most of us living in any major metropolitan area breathe in more air pollution than is normal, and we have to deactivate those compounds. When we can't do that well, we become chemically sensitive or environmentally sensitive to different smells and fumes and so on and so forth. But even if we don't have that problem, we are constantly using selenium to handle the pollution that we are being exposed to on a regular basis. Thus, we have competing systems for nutritional needs in our body. Some of them are trying to do detoxification. Some of them are trying to run metabolism. Selenium is a key pivotal nutrient. That's why Thyroid Helper uses selenium. It also uses manganese. Excuse me, I was going to say mangosteen. It doesn't use that. It uses manganese. Manganese is another mineral. Both manganese and selenium run antioxidant enzymes. Now, they also, besides helping to activate T4 to T3, they also provide the antioxidants that the thyroid gland needs and your liver needs in order to protect itself while it's making thyroid hormone. So the thyroid gland, as it's kicking into metabolic gear, it needs some oil in its engine, otherwise it gets inflamed. You don't want an inflamed thyroid because then your immune system starts to react to it, and eventually you get some sort of inflammatory thyroid problem, thyroiditis, Hashimoto's, you know, all these. It can progress to a full-blown autoimmune problem on the one end. But you want to keep your thyroid running cool. You don't want it running hot. So you need antioxidants in your thyroid, not only to help activate the hormone, but to protect it. So that's the theory behind Thyroid Helper, basic nutritional support for your thyroid and your thyroid antioxidants. Iodine, critically important compound for the formation of thyroid hormone. Thyroid hormone itself is called T4. It has a central molecule of the amino acid tyrosine, and it's surrounded by four molecules of iodine. Tyrosine is in Thyroid Helper. Iodine, we use a water-soluble iodine. I don't use potassium iodide because it isn't very soluble in your system. It's harder for your body to deal with. So I don't suggest supplements containing potassium iodide or kelp or things of that sort. I mean, if you understand iodine a little bit, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, for example, you've heard that term, I'm no doubt. Hashimoto's sounds Japanese, and it is. So Hashimoto's was discovered by a Japanese doctor who was analyzing Japanese patients who ate lots of seaweed and kelp. That's what they ate. They flooded their systems with potassium iodide. Your body cannot break down potassium iodide easily. It doesn't break it down. So if you consume a lot of it, it actually clogs your thyroid gland. The reason I like the Iosol iodine and have used it for over 20 years, and the product itself has been around some 70 years now, is because it's very water-soluble, very easy for your body to handle. So if, for example, you're using a fair amount of it, and it won't clog your thyroid, it's never done that in anyone in my experience, because your body easily just flushes it out. So it's very safe iodine. That's why we like it. And a lot of people will vary their amounts. Some will take a drop a day. Others will use up to 5 drops a day. But iodine, if you need it, and if you tell when you take it, it warms you up, then that's a good dose. You don't have to take it every day once you get warm. You might take it every 3 or 4 days. You know, you can do it kind of on an as-needed basis. So But it's very important. If you don't have iodine, you can't possibly make thyroid hormone. And if you don't have a form of iodine you can use easily, then it doesn't work as well. So that's why we do that. The third thing that's basic nutrition for thyroid is cellular energy production. In other words, thyroid hormone in and of itself does not make any energy. It's not an energy thing. Thyroid hormone goes and talks to your cells and tells them to make energy. Well, again, we're at a situation where your cells must have raw materials to make energy. Your cells' energy-producing systems are called mitochondria. They're little car engines that sit inside of cells. Some cells have four-cylinder engines. Some have eight-cylinder engines. Your heart, your immune system, your liver, your brain, you have a lot of eight-cylinder engines in there because they make a lot of energy. So you have different cells with different energy potential or horsepower, and thyroid is talking to them and telling them how fast to idle their car engines, what they should be set at for energy production purposes. So you still, when thyroid goes and talks to them, have to have your B vitamins. You have to have what we call the Krebs cycle cofactors that are essential in how those mitochondria make energy. That is what the daily energy multiple vitamin supplies. That is why we've had such success with just those basic three things, because they are your basic thyroid nutritional support compounds. All right, that's just basic nutrition. Now we can get to just a little bit more advanced on the basics, just so you understand. Again, we're still in the category of basic nutrients. Vitamin D, which in the past 18 months, if you've been reading the news and even reading my news, you will see that vitamin D is a wonder remedy for almost everything on Earth, and that during the winter months you are lacking it. And there is no doubt, there is no question that vitamin D also impacts the function of thyroid hormone, meaning that if you don't have enough vitamin D adequacy, thyroid hormone function is automatically downregulated. It runs slower. So a simple deficiency like vitamin D, even though it isn't a nutrient per se that goes into the formation of thyroid hormone, is literally one of the hormone players. Vitamin D is more of a hormone than it is a vitamin. And a lack of it affects many other things, and the new science on this shows very clearly that a lack of vitamin D can be a reason that your thyroid doesn't run at an optimal pace. So during the winter months, I always suggest 2,000 units of vitamin D a day for just about everyone. You can take a little bit more than that if you have a blood test showing that you need it. But it's very safe for anybody to take up to 2,000 units of vitamin D a day. And I highly suggest it in the winter time and even through the spring until the sun gets out and you get a little bit more sun on your body, and then you don't need as much. Iron. Iron can be a deficiency of iron in your body can mimic every single symptom of poor thyroid function, and will often be corrected within 1 or 2 weeks of taking iron, if you happen to need it. Why is that? Well, when your thyroid hormone goes and talks to the nucleus, the DNA of your cell, and tells it to begin producing things inside that cell, the next 80 gene signals that are trying to follow thyroid instructions require iron. If you don't have it, it can't even get the genes going that then run the cellular engines. Okay, so it's very important to have adequate iron. Now, in some cases, you will find that you can tell you're low in iron because, of course, your hemoglobin is low on a blood test or functionally on the low side. That's an indicator, but it's not ironclad proof of anything. Your blood level of iron on a lab test is sort of irrelevant. That fluctuates up and down and goes all over the place. The ferritin score, which is seldom done on a normal lab test, but you can ask for it. The reason it's not done is it's more expensive. It's about as expensive as the whole lab panel to do one ferritin. But ferritin is like your bank account of iron in your liver, and that is predictive of your iron levels in your cells. But there are certain symptoms that go along with low iron as a possibility. And one of them is muscles that don't have adequate energy and muscles that do not they either cramp up when you exercise, or they fatigue too easily, or if you're doing weight training, you don't seem to make the muscle gain from the amount of work you're doing. And the reason for that is that iron also controls the amount of oxygen in your muscles. There's something called myoglobin, which is a protein that contains iron. It's like your hemoglobin in your blood, but this is a protein in your muscles. And so if you don't have enough iron, you invariably don't have enough myoglobin, and you get fatigued too easily. Shortness of breath is another common symptom, especially at night. People who lay down and their heart beats too much, or in the middle of the night they wake up with a pounding heart or something of that sort, they don't have enough oxygen while they're sleeping. So that's a functional test of hemoglobin a lot of times. So as opposed to just what a blood test says. So one of the functional tests of hemoglobin is especially when you're laying down and sleeping at night. What kind of symptoms do you have relating to oxygen? And so these are some of the key signs, some of the physical signs, because iron is involved with how your body assembles protein, is the vertical ridges in your nails. If they're running vertical and they're deep, that's a classic iron deficiency. So it's just one of the physical things. And of course, iron can be involved, because it's involved with protein structures, it can be involved with your hair. So a lot of times if your hair is thinning or falling out and your muscles are feeling weak and you're running a little short on breath, and you're dragging around and it feels like you're hibernating, you may think you have a thyroid problem, because those are all thyroid symptoms, but you may just have an iron deficiency. So it's always something to consider if you have that collection of symptoms. And we use, of course, the blood builder, which is iron bisglycinate, iron bound to glycine, that does not cause free radical problems to your body. So it's a very safe iron. Very important topic for women of menstrual age, women with heavy menstrual cycles, and vegetarians who tend to run themselves into low thyroid problems all the time. All right, so that's iron. Zinc. Zinc is another key mineral. Not everybody needs extra zinc. In other words, we put zinc in our multiple vitamin and in various products, but some people do have a higher need for zinc. Why is zinc important? Zinc is required for your brain to make the signal called TRH, which is the signal that tells your thyroid gland to start making thyroid hormone in the first place. It requires zinc. If you don't have enough zinc, your brain doesn't tell your thyroid gland to get going. So this is backing up to the brain. It's not just your thyroid gland. Your thyroid gland is actually getting instructions from your brain. And we think about the pituitary gland sending out thyroid-stimulating hormone. We also have thyrotropin-releasing hormone, TRH. It's in your brain. It's telling your pituitary what to do. And that is, I believe, the area where 90% of chronic, low, weird, oddball thyroid symptoms are coming from. That's my opinion, but it's something to pay attention to. So one of the keys with that is low zinc, not enough zinc. Women may need up to 50 milligrams of zinc per day. Men may need up to 75 milligrams per day. Zinc is in red meat. A lot of people don't eat red meat. So not only with a lack of iron from not eating red meat, a lack of zinc is common from not eating red meat. With zinc, you'll see deficiencies as white spots on your fingernails. Classic zinc deficiency. Zinc is involved with your immune system, and it's involved with a metabolic state of strength. So some of the needs for zinc could evolve around somebody who catches colds very easily, gets sick really easily. Zinc is involved with your sense of smell, your sense of hearing, and your sense of taste. So senses that have started to not perform as well as they should could be involved with a lack of zinc. Zinc is responsible for transporting sex hormones and testosterone for both men and women. So a lack of sex drive or sexual performance for men, but sex drive for men or women, can be associated with a zinc deficiency. Zinc, of course, is required for sperm motility, and so fertility problems on the man's side can be involved with zinc. So we have a long list of things that might be affected by a lack of zinc. So if any of that, and there were some studies out just recently on zinc protecting pregnant women from alcohol exposure. Very interesting study. So it would be, in other words, if literally pregnancy The adverse effect of alcohol on the fetus was completely prevented by zinc. So it's something to keep in mind for if you know anyone who's of childbearing age, extra zinc as a precaution is just a good thing because sometimes women don't know when they're pregnant and they're out drinking. And so some extra zinc is a good thing. So zinc would be another thing. Zinc has been shown to be involved with the production of thyroid hormones because zinc runs about 400 enzymes, so it plays a role in how thyroid hormone is made by your thyroid gland. And zinc also is involved with your liver health. So it does a number of things in terms of thyroid hormone production and activation. Last but not least, on the basic nutrients, I put quercetin on the list. Quercetin is a bioflavonoid. It's in onions and apples. That's where it is in the food supply. It's a friend of vitamin C. It stabilizes mast cells, and it stabilizes inflammation-related problems. It is one of the best compounds for that. I observed from many years of hands-on clinical experience, seeing people with tested thyroid autoantibodies respond favorably to quercetin, meaning it seems to be a very helpful soother of the thyroid gland, probably the single best nutrient I know of to help with itises of the thyroid. And so I put it on there simply because it is good for that, and I like using it as part of a healthy diet. Of course, fresh fruits and vegetables will have some, but you can always boost it up. Quercetin is also one of the popular remedies for allergies and stabilizing springtime sinus stuff. And if it works for you and it works for many people, it's a good thing. So it's always something to consider. Those concepts are basic nutrition. And you want your basic nutritional grounds covered. You don't want to be lacking in something, as I was saying. But then we get to areas that are a little more advanced, you might say, in our understanding of thyroid hormone. And we have to start asking ourselves, why might my thyroid gland be running slow? What would cause it to run slow? What would make it think it should go slow? In other words, you're standing in the mirror looking, and maybe you say, oh, I need to lose some weight, or maybe you look in the mirror and you look like you're dragging, your face looks swollen, you have these thyroid symptoms going on, and you're wondering, how come you're so tired? How come your hair is falling out? How come you're not feeling so good? Your mood isn't very good? How come you just don't have energetic drive anymore, and you feel like somebody let the wind out of your sails, and you're dragging through life, and you're sure it's a thyroid problem? And now the problem is, does your brain actually think you should be running slow, or is something actually interfering with your thyroid? Good questions. Just take aging as an example. Now, your cells can only split and divide so many times before you run out of the ability to do that. Scientists estimate the human lifespan potential to be 120 years if nothing else stressed your body along the way, which is no small feat, obviously, to accomplish. You could maybe live under a mountaintop somewhere and not have to worry about anything and just nibble on grass around you and you'd be fine. I don't know what these people do in these mountain regions, but I don't think it's a great deal. Most of us have a life to live that involves stress and demands, and a lot of us push our bodies, a lot of us don't sleep enough, and so on. At any rate, you have your body can only split and divide cells so many times. So you start getting up into the 60s and 70s and even after 50, and you start noticing, A, your body doesn't heal as fast. You cut yourself or something, it doesn't heal as quickly as it did. If you really want to get depressed, you just hold your skin out like this and compare it to an 8-year-old's and you go, what happened to me? Because the skin cells don't split and divide and slough off anymore with gusto like they did at 8 years old. And you say to yourself, okay, well, is this a thyroid problem? Well, no, it's normal in a sense because your body is saying, well, we split and divided our cells a whole lot of times to grow the body in the first place. That's kind of normal. And now at this certain age here, we have to start predicting how long we can last. And if we split and divide cells too fast, we're not going to last as long. So it is actually very normal as you get older for your idling speed of your car engines to slow down a little bit. You know, when you're 20 years old, you might idle at 2,500 RPMs. When you're 40 years old, you might be down to, you know, 2,200. When you're 50, down to 1,900. When you're 60, maybe now your body decides it should idle at 1,500 or something. In other words, thyroid is setting the pace in your body. That's what it does. If you have to get up and run around right now, that has nothing to do with thyroid hormone. That has to do with adrenaline. But your thyroid hormone is your fundamental pace. It's like the drummer in the band, you know, it's beating at a certain pace. What's the tempo? What's the tempo in your body? If you're sitting in a chair in the afternoon and you pick up a newspaper to read and you're asleep within 5 minutes, your tempo is about 500 RPMs. Not very good. Okay? So, but what I'm saying is aging says, the body says on the one hand, okay, we have to calculate how long we can last. That's what your body's saying subconsciously. So as you get older, it's natural to go a little bit slower. But what you don't want is a combination of slow and frail. Slow and frail is a really, really, really bad combination. Slow and healthy is a really good combination. So it's natural to go a little slower, but you want to feel healthy. How do you feel healthy? Well, you got to use your body. You got to exercise it. You got to get off your duff. You got to go do things. You got to participate in life. You got to have some fun. You got to go to the gym every now and then. You got to go walk, etc. But your body, if it has this feeling when you're older that everything is still being used, and it has this sort of vibrant health feeling that you get when you use it, everybody knows what that feels like compared to when you don't do anything for a few weeks. The more you can keep that feeling maintained in your body on a regular, consistent basis, as your body naturally slows down, you stay healthy and your thyroid stays in good condition. But I simply point this out to illustrate that there is one key time called aging when your body will slow down on purpose. Frailty is always associated with an elevation of what's called reverse T3, which are the brakes on your metabolism. So when you're getting into a frail situation as an individual, your body thinks you're Humpty Dumpty about ready to fall off the wall and break something. So it says, we are really going to slow you down now. And of course, when you're in a frail situation, your ability to recover from almost anything is diminished dramatically. So you can't recover from infections as well. You can't recover from an accident. You can't recover from an illness. You get into this non-recovery mode. And of course, this is obviously involved with end stage of life, but also involved with serious health decline. So individuals, as they age unhealthily with thyroid problems, it may not even show up on their lab test, because a common lab test for T3 is actually a combination of active T3 and reverse T3 as one score. One is go and one is the brakes. Talk about a dumb lab test. How are you supposed to know what's what? Again, you can have reverse T3 measured by asking for it, but it just costs more money, a lot more. But you can still know what is the brake score. But you don't even have to get the test. You just ask yourself, how frail am I versus how fit am I? The more fit you are, the less reverse T3 you have active. The more frail you are, the less ability you have to recover from anything, the higher your reverse T3, and the more you are at risk for problems with your health. So that's what's going on with aging. Now, there's another reason why thyroid will go slow, and that has to do with starvation. Starvation was, in fact, the greatest threat to survival for mankind during evolution. It's kind of hard for us to think about that these days when we can stop at a gas station and get food effortlessly. But for our ancestors, starvation was issue number one. And when your body senses not enough food around, of course, this involves the hormone leptin, which I talk about a lot, it is required that your metabolism runs slower so that you use less energy so that you can survive. That is just obvious. I mean, how can you withstand a famine if your body is clicking along at 2,000 RPM baseline and then you speed up? No, you need to slow down to 1,000 RPMs. you need to slow down to survive. So when leptin problems or when leptin levels sense a lack of food availability in the environment, then leptin directly turns off the production of thyroid hormone in your brain, meaning it downregulates thyroid-releasing, or TSH and TRH. Both signals are turned down because leptin is commanding that thyroid not run at a faster pace so that you can withstand starvation. When more food is available, leptin levels begin to rise up in your blood because your fat now makes them as you're storing more calories, and the higher level of leptin getting into your brain now turns on thyroid hormone and permits your metabolism to run faster. So this is another reason that thyroid hormone would naturally go slower to withstand starvation. Now, lo and behold, people who are overweight and are struggling to lose weight invariably have a false state of perceived starvation. In other words, their subconscious brain thinks they are starving even though they are not. That is a huge metabolic problem. What happens is this: as you eat too much food on a regular basis and you keep raising your blood sugar levels too often, you make too many triglycerides, which are little fat blobs. These fat blobs clog leptin from getting into your brain. They sit between leptin and the ability of it to get through your circulation and into your head. When that happens, it's the same exact situation as a true starvation. So you induce your metabolism to run slower by having extra fat blobs floating around in your circulation, reflective of being overweight. But even if you are overweight, you can clear out those fat blobs from your circulation, and then leptin will get into your brain, and your metabolism will run faster, and your thyroid will turn back on, and then you can gradually lose weight. How do you do that? Very simple. You follow the five rules of the leptin diet. The most important ones from this perspective are not snacking between meals and not eating after dinner at night. Those, if you violate either one of those two rules, you will invariably raise triglycerides, block leptin from getting into your brain, and cause your brain to think it's starving. The third thing, of course, is eating meals that are too large. So that's the other thing, just way too much food. You say to yourself, oh my goodness, I made it 5 hours, thank God now I can eat, and you eat everything in sight. That doesn't work either. When thyroid and leptin are running normally, you don't need to eat more food. You actually feel and experience more energy from less food. You're more metabolically efficient. That is a sign your thyroid hormone is working better. Your head stays more awake on a regular basis. One of the classic symptoms of thyroid problem is that your head goes off. It energetically cannot stay awake in the afternoon. There are times in the day when it feels like somebody turned off the light switches. When you're eating in harmony with leptin, it will turn on your head, which is reflective then of thyroid hormone working better in your brain. Always. Don't need any fancy-dancy lab tests for this, and they don't even have one. But your symptoms tell you the story. How on is your head? How off is your head? Is it on most of the time? If it's off right now while I'm talking to you, I feel sorry for you. But if it's on most of the time, you're in good shape. Okay, so that's what you're looking for. You follow the eating pattern, and you can plug in leptinol, LeptiSlim, the leptin control pack. You can plug in as many nutrients as is needed so that you can stay in a good eating pattern. When you can stay in a good eating pattern, you create the environment that thyroid hormone can work correctly in your body. So, fundamental to thyroid health is just having nutrients for thyroid function and then having a food relationship that creates the potential for thyroid to feel like there's plenty around. It's not what you see with your eyes, it's what your subconscious brain thinks. Remember, your subconscious brain has absolutely no idea what you look like in the mirror. And it thinks whatever body weight you are at, it's doing a great job. Whatever body weight you are, it actually thinks that's what you should be. So you got to get, if your vision of your body doesn't connect with what you think it should be, you've got to change the way your brain thinks about this. And it's not adequate for me to just sit here and tell you to change the way your brain thinks about it. It has to actually change over time its perception of its relationship with fat and food and eating. And when you get this right, you will not have cravings, your head will be awake, and you'll be in a consistent mode. Even if you still have 20 or 30 or 40 pounds to lose, you can create the environment in your body where you're trending in the right direction. That means thyroid is now on, and you will gradually and consistently lose weight. And if you stay with it, it really will work. I'd say the biggest mistake people make is they actually get in this mode. They go, wow, my body can work. And then they decide to test it, human nature. They're at a party. They're out to eat. Bread certainly looks good. Butter even looks better on it. And yeah, sure, you'll eat a moderate meal. And by the time you're done, dessert even really sounds better, you see. And then after a couple days of that, you notice, oh, I'm tired again. So it's human nature to experiment with things. But when you get yourself in a good mode with thyroid and leptin, you can experiment all you want, or you can just take my advice for it. It's a lot easier to stay in that mode, because once you get thrown out of it, you could be out of it for a week or two and struggling the whole time. In other words, you knock yourself out of this mode of what was healthy, and then you say, okay, well, I'll change, and now you're back to eating right and doing everything you were doing before when you were feeling good and nothing's happening. And sometimes it takes a week or two to get back in the mode. So that wasn't really worth it. So the whole goal is to stay that way in the first part. Now, another reason why your thyroid will slow down is germs. The toxicity of germs. And this is new science. The thyroid releasing, or the thyrotropin releasing hormone, the TRH in your brain, is measuring many things in your body. And one of the things we now know that it is sensitive to are particles of toxins called endotoxins coming from bacteria. When it senses those in your body, it turns off the production of thyroid hormone. Turns it off, turns it down. And it's very similar to creating the same scenario as if you were aging or if you had a false state of perceived starvation. Except in this case, you may actually have a bacterial problem. Why would your brain turn down your metabolism in response to an infection? Anybody want to venture a guess? Because when your body is fighting something that's an infection, an internal exposure, if your metabolism were running too fast, your immune system would begin to hyperact to your own tissues and it would create an autoimmune problem. So, for example, if you are running from a saber-toothed tiger, you will find that you are very cold in your extremities because all of the blood was pulled out of your extremities and centered around your internal organs, a fight-or-flight response, not a low thyroid problem making you cold, a fight-or-flight response making you cold, so that if you get bit by a saber-toothed tiger, you don't bleed to death. At the same time, your immune system is turned down so that when the tiger bites, all the germs in the tiger's mouth and everything else from the outside world doesn't come rushing in. It swells, but your immune system is turned down in some aspects of it so you don't have to fight infections as the same way. You get a swelling response, but your body's immune system, you've probably noticed, your immune system main time of the day is at night while you're sleeping. Your immune system does house cleaning. Your immune system does many things besides fight infections. But if you're fighting a bug, your immune system will always take a run at it at night. In other words, if you've been fighting something for a number of days, you'll notice, for example, you get a fever as nighttime approaches. That's because your body's getting ready to have a fight. Well, why does your body fight at night? Because the rest of you isn't moving. That's why. Because there's way too many other things going on, you see. So that's a survival thing. if your immune system is running at full pace, when your metabolism isn't running at full pace, it doesn't go well together. So that's acute infections. But now we have this problem with subacute or low-grade ongoing infections. Where are those hanging out? Your teeth, periodontal problems, issue number one. Your sinuses, if they're clogged and congested on a regular basis. Your digestive tract. You have to understand that you have more bacteria in your digestive tract, more cells of bacteria, than you have cells of your own body. Lots more. It's not a trivial amount of cells. They're supposed to be living in harmony with you. If they start forming gangs in your neighborhood, you'll start having gas, bloating, indigestion, constipation, diarrhea, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And somebody's gotten into a hostile mode and somebody is making extra endotoxin. And that will feed back directly to your brain and crash your thyroid. That's what we now know about this subject. Very, very interesting discoveries. This is all new. Nobody knew this more than a year ago. So we must handle balance of symptoms relating to toxicity. Subclinical viral infections are also as important as bacterial infections. Because how does a virus work? A virus works by latching onto your cells, hijacking them, going into your cells, and taking over your mitochondrial cell engines, turning them into fermenting breweries, and using that process to reproduce and make 10,000 copies of itself. Well, when it takes over your cell engines, you're no longer making energy, so thyroid isn't working anymore. So a subclinical viral infection will make you cold. So how do you tell the difference between a subclinical viral infection and a thyroid problem? Well, a lot of people have both, but what's the difference? How do you differentiate? Subclinical viral infections hang out in your voice box and your liver. So individuals who wake up with sore throats, who have swollen glands in here, up in here, you push in here and it's sore. A lot of times that's subclinical viral. You're not sick, but it hurts in here. You look at a blood test. Your white blood count should be at resting baseline. A lot of blood tests, you're trying to be in the middle of normal range. With a white blood count, you're trying to be at the low end of normal because your immune system is supposed to be resting. So if that level is up in the sixes or sevens or eights, which is still now seemingly in the middle of the normal range, it means something has your immune system revved up on a low-grade basis all the time. So you can actually see this on a blood test fairly easily. People who have been struggling with low-grade viral infections or other infections for a long period of time will often have low white blood counts because they are just exhausted. So if your blood count goes too low, that means you've usually been battling something like that for many years. So then you know you need immune boosting and toxin clearing support. Candida helper, monolaurin are fatty acid products that help to balance the digestive tract and are excellent in this situation. Anything you can do for digestive health, whether it's acidophilus, digestive enzymes, anything you can do to improve your symptoms and get a better balance in there will invariably take stress off the thyroid. There is a tremendous amount of data now showing that individuals who are constipated develop thyroid autoantibodies because the inflammation coming from the digestive imbalance is so significant that not only does it interfere with your brain's production of thyroid hormone, it goes to your thyroid gland and inflames it. Then we have to deal with the issue of chemicals. And the Environmental Protection Agency, which is equally as negligent, if not more so, than the Food and Drug Administration. I mean, you have to understand that our government bureaucracies are run by unelected bureaucrats who have jobs in the industries they're supposed to regulate. We used to say that this was a revolving door industry where they'd work in the place for a while, like the EPA or the FDA, and especially in the case of their managers, and then they would go on to take jobs in the industries after they did a quote-unquote good job of making sure that whoever they were supposed to regulate didn't get regulated so they could keep selling whatever it was they were doing. This is normal. This is how Monsanto sells Frankenfoods to the American public. It has nothing to do with health. These things are dangerous to health, but that's how it happens. Well, the Environmental Protection Agency is equally horrid and has been for a long, long, long time. Thus, there are multiple chemicals in the environment. The specific one that is a disaster for thyroid function is called perchlorate. Perchlorate is a rocket fuel ignition substance used by the military and used in fireworks. Perchlorate has to be recycled every 7 or 8 years. So if you have munitions and they haven't been used, then you have to dump them, and the military has been dumping them into water. And they do not decay, so they get into the groundwater. And this is a huge problem. One place in particular, it was in Colorado, completely poisoned the Colorado River with perchlorate, which feeds all of Arizona and most of California as potential water sources. Well, we grow a lot of food in California that you eat. That's just the way it is. Some regions may not have perchlorate, but anybody that's fed by the Colorado River does. And it doesn't matter if the food is organic or not, because it has to do with the water. And this is a huge problem. The Environmental Protection Agency, through the Bush administration, fired every scientist in the EPA that was objecting to the perchlorate levels that were found in California. Fired them, got rid of them. Railroaded them out of the EPA. So what you have now is, you know, managers who are on the same page with industry and a bunch of scientists who are terrorized or terrified of opening their mouths for fear of losing their jobs. This is how government does business. The problem is, and it's not just California, mind you, there are 36 states with perchlorate contamination. And you can, I've got things on my website, you can see where those are. If you just Google perchlorate on my website, you can look up and you find all my things I've written about it. But the point is, this is especially problematic to children, because when mothers consume dairy products and lettuce from regions where this is grown, they will accumulate perchlorate in their breast milk, in their breast tissue. Perchlorate binds more tightly to your thyroid gland than iodine does. That's why it's such a problem. And a little baby whose fluid intake is very high can become very toxic from perchlorate. And if thyroid hormone isn't working right because of this, then the ability of a baby to thrive is dramatically reduced. And the likelihood for obesity and other thyroid problems is huge. This is a major public health epidemic. It would cost $50 billion for the military to clean up this problem. And when push came to shove, the military played the race card, if you will. They played the national defense card, so they didn't have to clean it up. They said, if we have to clean this up, we wouldn't be able to defend our country. So we'll just go ahead and let all the poisoning to the little babies happen. And that's where we stand right now as a society on this issue. I don't hear Obama saying a word about it. I'm not a Bush or Obama fan, don't get me wrong here. On the subject of cleanliness of the environment and actually the real issues that matter, this is one of them, and nobody's doing anything or even talking about it. So, and because it would just cost a lot of money to clean up. We have other ones that are similar, with PCBs still contaminating everything. These things get in the way and interact with thyroid function. And it's important to understand that even when the EPA says something is bad, it's usually because it can cause cancer. On dose levels of toxic exposure that are commonly occurring in our food supply, our water, and our air pollution, levels that do not cause cancer, they cause metabolic disruption of thyroid hormone. So they, you know, long before you have a disease coming about from the toxic exposure, you have metabolic disruption. It is a big issue. So these are some of the toxic type issues that you're dealing with, and it's why you need adequate fiber, because fiber is like a sponge for toxins. It sucks it up. You can use products like Chlorella or Daily Balancer, which has chlorella in it, which will suck up the fat-soluble toxins. And in the case of perchlorate, it's why you want to make sure you have adequate iodine, because the perchlorate, if you're getting it, is more likely to bind to your thyroid. You need iodine constantly there to offset that issue. But these are toxin issues. If you're constipated, you must get your bowels moving. Motility helper, extra fiber, vitamin C. You must get your bowels moving. If you're environmentally chemically sensitive, you must improve that situation. Your liver, which is processing all of these toxins, also is converting T4 to T3. It's the main organ in your body that does it. So when your liver is working overtime trying to handle pollution and toxins, then the cell membranes of the liver are disturbed by the toxins. That gets in the way of activating thyroid hormone directly. So it's very, very important to have your plumbing systems working well, to have your digestion moving through, to have not chemical sensitivity problems, and to have basic things in your nutrients that help deactivate toxins. The reason Daily Balancer is a daily formula is because it deactivates toxins, and we're exposed to many. So if you have long-term struggles with thyroid-like symptoms, you want liver support always to protect your liver from the pollution, and you want to limit your exposure to this stuff. You need to eat a cleaner diet. And it's both toxins and germs that interfere with thyroid. All right, next thing is stress. Stress is another factor that you have to have a variable on. The worst kind of stress for regular thyroid function is anxiety. Nervous anxiety reflected in part by a lack of sleep. It is absolutely the worst kind of stress feelings. I mean, you can be angry, you can be upset, you could feel resentful, you could be sad. None of those things are great if you feel that way all the time. But anxious, wired, feel like a cat on a hot tin roof is the worst feeling to have if you're trying to balance your thyroid. In this situation, you are sitting at the stop sign with your foot on the gas pedal and the clutch in, going 80 miles an hour nowhere. Very, very, very inefficient. Your subconscious brain thinks there must be some emergency, whether there is or not. That's what it thinks. So it's feeding a panic alarm directly into the system that sets the pace for thyroid hormone in your brain and turns it down. The more wired you feel, the more off your thyroid system goes. Why? Well, if you're constantly wired by something and your metabolism is running faster, you're going to burn up. So one system has to go slower. Otherwise, it's the same as the aging issue where things burn up too fast. So it's a defense mechanism against stress, partly, especially anxious stress. I've written about the nerves involved. They're called hypocretins. Gets kind of technical. But when they get wired up, that's how you feel, like a cat on a hot tin roof, and you get anxious. And then you normally can't sleep, which is another real stressor to the thyroid. Lifestyle modification for this involves putting your own self on your own priority list for having fun, relaxation, walks, enjoyment, balance, anything that makes a more calm feeling go through your body, no matter what it is helpful. And you must have it there. It's not, you can't just take a vitamin. You actually have to make your body get relaxed. Now, vitamins can help. You can take a sleep helper and Relax-A-Mag to help you sleep at night. You can even take them during the day. You can take nutrients that help stress, like Stress Helper or Pantothene, or vitamin C. I mean, there's phosphatidylserine. You've got so many things you can do, but you have to have a plan where, whether it's one thing or 10 things or just your lifestyle, your combining lifestyle and nutrients, you actually feel somewhere in there, there's a calmness somewhere that you can get in touch with. So no matter what goes on in your life, no matter how many issues there are, no matter how many demands there are on you, you have to have a safe place in there that you've created that has a sense of balance that offsets all of that. And when you do that well, then your system won't get wound up and your thyroid won't go off. And conversely, if you have these problems and you solve this, then your thyroid can come on. In other words, you actually have to relax to get going. You have to rejuvenate to get going. Very true for a lot of people, and especially people who are stuck overweight. But you don't have to be overweight to have that problem. So that's stress and sleep. My final topic on thyroid that I want to emphasize is the thyroid relationship to cardiovascular health. And it is a significant one. And of course, it's never talked about in the mainstream media or by medical professionals as even being an issue. But it is. And the reason it is an issue is because your circulation is handling how well oxygen moves around in your body, and thyroid hormone is handling the use of oxygen at the cellular level. So your basal metabolic rate, which is controlled by thyroid hormone, is the rate at which your cells use energy and fuel, use oxygen and fuel to make energy. And so when there's a problem making energy at the cellular level, there's always a problem with oxygenation inside your cells. And the synergistic relationship between circulation and oxygen utilization in cells is significant, meaning that if your cells are gagging and choking like they're in a room with no windows open, your heart will pump harder to try to push oxygen to them, even though that's not the problem. So there's very much of a relationship here. One of the key symptoms that you don't think of as a thyroid symptom is the feeling of oxygen in your body. You know, sometimes when you go for a walk, especially if you're going for a walk around the lake, you feel more energized. You feel more oxygenated. You've got your cells running better. You've actually got thyroid working better at the cellular level. But there's a sense, a feeling of energy. Then other times in the day, you know, you eat food, there's no energy. You're sluggish. You're tired. You're sitting there. You're just, you know, there's no oxygenation happening. So you're trying to improve that. I mentioned earlier about iron. That's one cofactor. But just getting thyroid hormone working better will help your cardiovascular health, and it actually regulates, it's part of the reason for using cholesterol. So when thyroid's running right inside your cells use cholesterol better, and that helps the cholesterol efficiency in your body. It's not the only thing that regulates cholesterol, but it is a key thing. When your thyroid slows down, your cells don't need to use cholesterol as much. They put a UPS call tag on their cell membrane surface saying we need a pickup of cholesterol rather than a delivery. When you've got all kinds of cells running in slow motion with call tags on them, why would you be surprised your LDL cholesterol levels go up? So you want to get to the source of problems. You want to get cells running better. So what I've given you today is basic concepts of how you would address your own thyroid issues. You want basic nutrition that gets your thyroid hormone system functioning. Your basics, your daily energy, your thyroid helper, iodine, and if needed, you know, some strengthener plus with zinc or some blood builder with iron or some extra vitamin D or maybe some quercetin. Then you look at your relationship with food and getting in sync with leptin and thyroid so that your metabolism has permission to go. And then you start to evaluate other areas such as your digestion, your sinuses, low-grade symptoms of fighting off things with your immune system, toxic exposure from your food supply, and you start trying to reduce these things to take the stress off of your thyroid system. And then, you know, stress management. Enough anti-stress techniques for you, whether it's lifestyle, whatever it might be, nutrition to boost up your mood or energy as needed, but you want a strategy where stress
is especially not making you feel anxious or wound up or creating sleep problems. Those are the biggest issues. The other kind of stress issue that's really throws the thyroid for a loop is an accident, injury, or surgery, or pregnancy. So those are more acute and intense. But low-grade stress, especially if it makes you feel anxious, is public enemy number one to your thyroid gland. Do something about it. And then, of course, sleeping, right? And when you do all this well, it will have a spillover effect not only on your thyroid running more efficiently, but your cardiovascular health will be supported likewise. So it's, thyroid is very, very profound. It covers lots of ground. You can fix thyroid issues doing this naturally. You're actually getting to the source of problems. When you take these kind of stressors off the thyroid system, the whole system is permitted to run better. And that is terrific because you're actually solving something, not just suppressing symptoms. So all you have to do is figure out how what I just said relates to you, and you're good to go. All right. Thanks very much for coming today.
The Weekly Wellness Update podcast is produced by Wellness Resources Incorporated. Copyright 2008. All rights reserved. For more information on the topics and news covered in today's podcast, visit wellnessresources.com. To email Byron a specific health question, send it to askbyron@wellnessresources.com. The information presented in this podcast is for informational purposes. It is not medical advice for the treatment of any condition or illness. You should not use the information in this podcast for diagnosis or treatment of any health problem or to discontinue the use of any medication that has been prescribed to you. Consult your physician or healthcare professional for such needs. Statements made during this podcast regarding any Wellness Resources dietary supplement products have not been evaluated by the FDA. Wellness Resources dietary supplement products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.